I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Monday, May 1st, 2023. The time is 3:31 p.m. Committee members present today: Senator Kawasaki, Senator Clayman, Senator Kaufman, Senator Dunbar, and myself, Co-Chair Giesel. Co-Chair Bishop is presenting a bill in another committee, and I believe Senator Wilikowski, the Vice Chair, will be along shortly. Thank you to Carrie Cooper-Ryder and Amanda Kraft for helping us with today's meeting. Senate Bill 68 was removed from today's agenda. Today on the agenda we have Area M overview presentation. This is part two of a two-part presentation. Today we are hearing from invited testimony, and there are five folks on the list. We have Chief Brian. Let me just take a look here, make sure we've got the folks here. Chief Brian Ridley. There he is. He's online. He'll be followed by Francis Leach, who is also online. Kylie Thompson, who's online. Kurt Chamberlain, also online. And lastly, Virgil Umfrenor. I'm not sure I pronounced. Am I getting that close to right? Okay. Thank you, Senator Kawasaki. He'll be the last speaker up. So, first, I want to invite to the phone Chief Brian Ridley from the Tenenbaums Chiefs Conference. You'll see in your packet some documents from Chief Ridley as well. So, Chief Ridley, welcome. If you would please put your name on the record and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, welcome. Thank you. Again, my name is Brian Ridley. I'm the Chief Chairman, President, and CEO of the Tanana Chiefs Conference, and I want to thank the co-chair, Giesel, for the opportunity to testify. I'm from the village of Eagle on the Yukon River at the Canadian border, and so most of my Native family is actually in Canada, so the fact that we're not meeting escapement goals into Canada is a big concern of mine. Not only am I here representing Tanana Chiefs Conference, but I also have the Alaska Federation of Natives and the 574 tribes of the National Congress of American Indians. They see our struggling salmon populations for what they are and what they represent, a prioritization of business and money over food on every table and the preservation of 10,000 years of traditions. Why are you hearing so much about Area M this year? Why are we having an entire hearing on this one issue? Why can't we leave these discussions to the folks that sit on the Board of Fish? First, let me say that Area M was shut down in the early 70s to protect the Bristol Bay fishery. And so to me, that set a precedence in doing exactly what you're being asked to do down there in Juneau. I cannot stress enough to you, our lawmakers, the requirement of Board of Fisheries to prioritize sustainable salmon fisheries management and reasonable opportunities for customary and traditional subsistence salmon fishing over commercial fishing, and their failure to do so absolutely warrant legislative action. In every other fishery in Alaska except Area M, the policy and practice of the Alaska Board of Fisheries and ADF&G is to close commercial fishing on a stock when escapement and subsistence needs are not going to be met. This is a foundation of the sustained yield principle found in the Alaska Constitution and precautionary management found in the Sustainable Salmon Fisheries Management Policy. Sustainable salmon management is crucial to the resource itself and to the 37 federally recognized tribes and other Alaska Native organizations that Tanana Chiefs Conference serves. Salmon represents wellness in our communities. We come to these hearings and commissions and talk about our culture and our way of life, about empty smokehouses and a generation of lost children who only know how to cut fish when we ship them a box of the salmon we buy from the commercial fisheries. You have the opportunity to hear from Commissioner Vincent Lang on Friday. He spoke to you about the science, scientists, and the data, all of which he claims support the decision that the board made in February. What the commissioner failed to mention is sustainable salmon management is written into the Alaska Constitution. The commissioner will tell you that the decision made on Area M represented a compromise, but that compromise was only between the processors and the seiners. A compromise that had nothing to do with the Yukon River and everything to do with the Board of Fish handing over the reins to commercial interests. In that February meeting, the board adopted the Adaptive Management Plan, which gives away board authority to Area M seiners and processors to manage their own season, a transfer of the board's authority. This plan is without precedent in the salmon world. The only remotely similar plan was the Chignik Co-op from 02 to 05. That plan resulted in the Grunert litigation, and the Alaska Supreme Court concluded that the board did not have the authority to allow the private sector to self-regulate their fishery. This Area M plan puts the proverbial fox in the henhouse. There's no incentive to not chum chuck if the fleet feels they are intercepting too many chum in relation to the sockeye-directed fishery. The Bering Sea pollock industry has 100% observer coverage on their boats for this very reason. The transfer of board and department authority to private enterprise is precisely why the legislature needs to reassume their authority over the Board of Fish. The seiners will tell you that we need to trust the board, that there's nothing to see here. In instances of unanimous or nearly unanimous decisions, maybe that's warranted. However, in this instance, board members expressed discomfort about this decision. Ultimately, only four members voted to allow the self-regulation or self-policing of one of our natural resources to the industry, calling the arrangement a handshake and a prayer. The responsibility to protect this resource is on you, the legislature. You delegate to the commissioner, and he has delegated the board, who has delegated to the only people who stand to benefit. So your agent has prioritized commercial fishing in Area M above all else, over escapement, over sustained yield, over subsistence, when subsistence is supposed to be the top priority. On April 25th, Representative Louise Stutes expressed the opinion that the legislative body should not override boards, claiming it will destabilize our whole state government. That if we are unhappy with the decision made by the Board of Fish, our remedy is to change the board. With all due respect to the member from Kodiak, the Board of Fisheries and the Board of Game are unique to the many boards and commissions the state of Alaska in that they are managing a resource on behalf of all Alaskans. They are not the same as a board that is regulating other licensed professionals or acting in an advisory capacity. It is absolutely the duty of the legislature to ensure that these boards are making decisions that are legally defensible and in the best interest of all Alaskans. TCC understands that the interception of our salmon in Area M and salmon bycatch in the Bering Sea pollock fishery alone are not to blame for the collapse of our chum and king salmon. However, on the Yukon River in particular, the situation has become so dire that we have reached the point where every single chum and Chinook salmon matters. The more than 18,000 people served by TCC already have taken the ultimate sacrifice by not fishing for salmon and not practicing our ways of life for years. Area M fishermen have many other fishing opportunities. We have none. It's time that all Alaskans and our neighbors from other states who make up the Area M commercial fleet join us in conservation efforts to rebuild our salmon populations. As you move past this hearing into budget discussions, keep these words in your mind. Interior Alaska fish equals wellness. It is part of the education discussion, part of the permanent fund discussion, part of the mental health and criminal justice discussion. To say that salmon is a way of life is not an exaggeration. Thank you, Mossy Cho.
Thank you, Chief Ridley. Are there any questions for Chief Ridley, committee members? Yes, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Chief Ridley, for being online today. You know, I just had a couple questions, if you could, for the – there's a lot of urban members on this committee. But your region, the Tanana Chiefs region, can you just tell us a little bit about the region and how important the fishery is to those folks who live right on the river? And you did mention the fish boxes that were sent to you, and I think that that's a story that needs to be heard.
Yes. We always say that our region roughly is just about the size of the state of Texas. So we cover from the Canadian border almost all the way over to the West Coast, but not quite. We've got 42 tribes and tribal organizations. Primarily, for the most part, not completely, but mostly we're on the river system, so we are very dependent on the fish. And one thing it's easy for me to get caught up with is to say it's a food source. But what we've learned in this process is it's so much more than that. There's a major cultural piece to this that I try to emphasize in my testimony about being able to cut fish, being able to pass that down to our younger generations and hang the fish and smoke the fish. There's just a process to it, and it's really hard to explain, but to me it's almost like when you take down a moose and you, the sharing and the teaching and all that stuff, and it's really going away. I mean, the fact that we spend as a region close to $1 million a year supporting the commercial fisheries to get fish to our region, it just is crazy to me. So for anyone to say we don't support commercial fishing, boy, we've never supported it more in our lives by spending almost $1 million a year to do that. Did that answer the question?
It sure did. Thank you, Senator. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Kawasaki. Any other questions for Chief Ridley? Chief Ridley, you know, you talked about passing on the culture, and without the actual experience, it's hard to pass on the technique of cutting fish or butchering a moose that you've shot. You know, it is true, I live in Anchorage, but in the winter, my husband and I burn wood in our wood stove. Well, one day he was out of town or something, our youngest son was home, and so I said, David, I need some wood split. We went out, and he picked up the axe, the splitting maul, and he said, how do you do this? And I realized, oh, no, this is something my husband does every winter, and he hasn't passed it on to our son. I know exactly what you're talking about and the importance of it, So, Chief Ridley, you talked a lot about the board, and you contrasted the Board of Fish with the professional regulatory boards that we have right now. And you said, you know, those boards aren't like the Board of Fish. You know, on other boards, we have designated seats. And those boards are rather large. They're, you know, at least 7 members typically with designated seats. And usually 1, if not 2, public members who have no affiliation with the profession being regulated. The Board of Fish is different. Clarify for me what the Board of Fish makeup is, how those members are chosen. Are there designated seats?
Not as far as I know, and that was one of the biggest issues that I ran into kind of learning how this process goes the last, 6 months or so. So by all means, we would love designated seats of some kind. The hard part with this is, I hope it's okay for me to say, but how politicized it feels, how the appointments are done and all that stuff. You know, the more I learn about this process, the more concerned I am about it because of just that. So for us to just sit back and be expected to, just trust in the board and the makeup. It'll change over time and maybe it'll be in our favor. I mean, it's so heavily politicized. It's kind of crazy. And definitely something that I think the legislature could take up and hopefully improve on or fix. But, you know, the more I've learned about this process in the last 6 months, the more it's concerned me.
Thanks for that, Chief Ridley. Yes, I know it's politicized. Even the appointment on the professional boards can be a political situation. It's just something that I've thought a lot about is who is appointed, is there good diversity, and are all the voices heard? Thank you very much for your testimony. I don't see any other committee members with questions for you, so thank you for that.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Frances Leach. She's from the Area M Seniors Association. Let's see. Frances, there you are. Can you hear us? Oh, there you are. Great. Thanks. You're here in the room.
And I'm bringing Kylie up as well at this time.
Great. And you have a PowerPoint. So, members, you probably have that in your packets.
And I would like to state that, I guess it's not this PowerPoint. Yes, this PowerPoint is the same as the one I'm presenting today.
Okay, great. Well, welcome if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Giesel and members of the Senate Resource Committee. My name is Frances Leach, and I work with Area M Seniors Association and Concerned Area M Fishermen. We're here today because I was asked to speak about Proposal 140 and why it did not pass at the Alaska Board of Fisheries meeting. I was there at the meeting. I also want to just add that I worked for the Board of Fish for 7 years, and I can talk a lot about the Board of Fish, and I'm very familiar about the process. But I'd like to start by saying that the majority of the Area M commercial fleet is composed of year-round Alaskan residents, many of which who are Alaska Native, who utilize the commercial fishery to help meet their subsistence needs. This fishery targets sockeye, not chum, and they are taking the issue of incidental chum harvest very seriously and taking many measures and precautions to reduce chum harvest, including a voluntary stand down from 217 hours out of 352 hours to allow chum to migrate through the region in 2022. That was a voluntary, not state-mandated stand-down that resulted in 61% of a reduction in fishing time to allow for chum passage. I guess I forgot to put it on that slide. Okay. Proposal 140 sought to close the commercial salmon fishery down during specific times during the June fishery in hopes to get more chum up to the AYK. It is critical to note that only a small portion of AYK chum passed through Area M. The proposal was a replica of the Fish and Game Management Plan for the Area M June fishery between 2001 and 2003, which decimated the region, actually increased chum harvest, and had no noticeable benefits for AYK chum stocks. In fact, after that regulation was changed to its current form in 2004, the AYK chum returned to its former 2 million plus returns. The board ultimately voted down Proposal 140, and that 3-4 vote is not as controversial as one might think. Those votes happen quite often at the Board of Fish. The four members who voted down the proposal felt the proposal could not guarantee it would lead to increased chum passage during windows set forth in the proposal due to the fact that there is no assurance fish are going to move through during that set time. Ultimately, the board would be closing the fishery down in hopes to reduce chum harvest, with no certainty chum reduction would actually happen. Board members felt that caps, triggers, and windows based on informative data via the adaptive management agreement would be more effective at measuring when chum were in the area. Members also based their decision on scientific presentations and written reports provided during the meeting, including sampling data that indicated about 17% of the chum harvested in the June Area M fishery were chums from coastal western Alaska, also known as CWAC, which which, remember, includes the Kuskokwim River, the Yukon River, Norton Sound, and Bristol Bay. The most more important figure is that the Area M harvest of SEWAC chum, which is 5.5%, a figure that represents all the SEWAC chum harvested in these four major river systems, plus escapement to those same systems. Additionally, the board was provided a report by ADF&G's Dr. Katie Howard explaining that the Yukon chum salmon have significantly declined due to a 2016 through 2019 heat wave, which decimated chum salmon during the ocean years, which severely affected the runs for 2020 and 2021. There's been a lot of misinformation circulating that the Board of Fish did nothing to mitigate chum harvest in Area M, and this is simply not true. The board adopted proposal 130, sorry, this is the slide you're supposed to have. The board adopted proposal 136 with amendments, which resulted in 22% less fishing time in the first period, a closure that is 2.4 times longer in between the first and second period, and 25% less fishing time in the second period. These numbers may not seem significant, but the maximum fishing time allowed by regulation will be less due to chum avoidance directed by fishermen. The total time will be based on chum encounter rates, meaning if there are a lot of chum, the fleet will fish less. If there aren't as many chum, the fleet will fish more within regulatory parameters. And most significantly, the board chose to close Sanic Island section of the Unimak district to all gear types. This entire district was closed because it was known for higher chum harvests. And here's just another slide that shows the difference between the pre-Board of Fish actions and the post-Board of Fish actions. The board also recognized the fleet implementing a cooperative management agreement, which requires 100% of the fleet to sign on, share all harvest data, monitor chum harvest in season, in space and time, and stand down or move fishing locations when directed to create opportunity for chums to pass through. This adaptive approach is the best way to ensure fewer chum are harvested in the South Peninsula fishery, as opposed to fixed closures in regulation that may not correspond to when chum are actually in the area. Lastly, the board adopted triggers and caps for the South Unimak and Shumigan Island sections, which require ADF&G to restrict fishing time and close the areas if they are exceeded. Next, I'd like to just turn it over to Kylie Thompson, who's the president of Area M Saners Association, and he'll explain the adaptive management plan.
Sorry, Madam Chair, members of the Resources Committee. My name is Kylie Thompson. I am a resident of Sandpoint, Alaska, and I'm also the president of the Area M Saners Association. Thank you for inviting me here today to explain the adaptive management strategy, which we developed and operated under in 2022 with oversight of the Department of Fish and Game. After an increase of take of chum salmon in 2021, our fleet recognized we needed to make some drastic changes to decrease chum harvest in our fishery. In addition to following the Alaskan Department of Fish and Game's management regulations, we decided to take fleet action to further reduce chum harvest. Thus came the inception of the Area M Adaptive Fleet Management Strategy. In 2022, we implemented the Area M, I need an acronym for this, the Area M Adaptive Fleet Management Strategy. The purpose of this strategy was to use on the water, near real-time information across the whole of the fishing area to monitor and reduce chum harvest in June, while still optimizing a sockeye fishery. We modified time and area closures as needed throughout June in response to chum abundance on the grounds. This type of adaptive management required vessels to cooperate, processors to provide daily reports, and vessels to move or stop fishing when directed to do so. Implementation of this fleet-led policy resulted in more than a 50% reduction in chum harvest in June 2022 compared to June 2021. To make decisions on fishing time and area, a 7-member board of active fishermen used daily reports from processors and the fleet to make near real-time decisions. This fisherman board governed all 60 seine vessels in the fleet during June. In addition, we operated a cooperative test fishery with ADF&G to assess chum salmon abundance at three locations across the South Peninsula for 2 days prior to and the first day of the June fishery, resulting in the loss of the first day of the fishery to the same fleet to better assess chum abundance. These test fisheries showed decreasing chum abundance, which allowed a partial day of fishing on June 11th to assess chum harvest with the entire fleet fishing. Moving forward, the managing board announced time reductions based on the previous day's harvest, and as the season progressed, individual fleets at many locations stood down separate from the rest of the fleet in other locations. This strategy can only be done with the flexibility of time and area, fleet management, cooperation, and responsive reporting. To help keep track of the data and alert the fleet of closures, Area M Saners and Aleutians East Borough have created an app that will be used by the seven board members and fleet in 2023 to streamline the reporting process and dramatically improve the speed at which decisions can be made and relayed to the fleet. This slide shows the homepage that captures aggregate fleet data in real time. The red numbers represent sockeye, and the green numbers represent chum. The data on this screen is updated every 30 minutes to reflect ADF&G or processor e-landings. If the chum harvests are too high, the board will select yellow closure button, which automatically notices the entire fleet of the closure via email. It is mandatory for the entire same fleet to stop fishing. The stand down button is for on the grounds reports. If a group of fishermen are in an area that they see an influx of chum, they can click the green stand down button to show they are voluntarily standing down to allow for chums to pass through the area. The two images on the left show the options for both the closure and stand down feature. Both closures and stand downs record the region, time, and beginning and end. We think this is a new and innovative approach for a state fishery to respond to a management need that can have much better outcomes than fixed time and area closures. The commercial fishermen in Area M are committed to decreasing our chum harvest, and we've put a lot of effort into this program with 100% of the fleet on board. The legislative bills to shut down the entire Area M June fishery are not even in line with Proposal 140, which came before the Board of Fish. Additionally, these bills seek to close the North Peninsula and Nelson Lagoon salmon fisheries, which harvest no Western Alaska chums. The genetic sampling done on the Area M chum harvest is important to consider, since about 17 to 18% of the chum harvest were chum destined for coastal Western Alaska, and the state has committed to continuing that sampling next year. The bills before the legislature will have a devastating impact on our region's communities and economy, with very little benefit to AYK chums. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Thompson. Questions? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Chair Giesel, and thank you both for being here. And I should say also thank you to Chief Ridley for being on the phone. I have to, unfortunately, run to another committee, but I wanted to ask this question before. So, you know, we have heard these concerns about chum chucking, you know, that I guess I just want to hear you speak to how do you avoid that? How do you make sure the data is good? How do you make sure people, they're going to have an incentive now to not report chum caught or to throw them back, rather, because it's going to shut down the whole fleet if you hit that yellow button, right? So how are you preventing that practice? And how can people that aren't part of the fishery be assured that it's happening?
It's a tough question to answer. I mean, I guess the best way to answer it in 2023 is, I mean, the department – enforcement has drones and they're out there all the time and you never know who's watching you anymore. This isn't 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And it's difficult to be a salmon fisherman now because your eyes are on the sky all the time, so to speak. But you never know where enforcement is. But I mean, I haven't seen it. It doesn't do us any good. We had really good luck with this program last year. The most important thing is not fishing when there's so many chums there that you would put someone in a situation where they felt like they had to do something poorly. And we managed to do that last year by not fishing when the chums were there. I think that's probably the best answer.
Senator Dunbar, through the chair, I'd also like to add that, you know, we did hear this, you know, and we've heard it a lot, that there was a lot of chum-chucking. In reality, you know, that may have happened, but that's like saying that every single person who drives down Egan Drive is throwing garbage out their window because somebody did it. That is not what the same fleet in Area M represents. That is not the standard of a commercial fisherman. Commercial fishermen just do not wanton waste. So I think that's important.
Thank you. Follow-up, Senator Dunbar?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you both for that answer.
Yes. Senator Kawasaki?
Yeah, just just to briefly follow up on that, and I don't mean to impugn any particular fisherman, but without, I mean, just the question that we just had, there is sort of a, I don't know what you would call it, a situation where the situation is that you don't want to have chum fish and you don't want to have a closure, and how you get that voluntary compliance amongst fishermen to also do the same. I guess I just don't know. It's not a question. The question actually has to do with the adaptive management in particular. It's voluntary. Is that it's a voluntary system, then? Can you explain that a little bit more?
In 2022, it was voluntary, 100% voluntary, and we had 100% participation. The only real – speaking of 2022 – the only real pressure we had was peer pressure to keep every, you know, if somebody decided to go off the rails. In 2023, at the Board of Fish, all three processors submitted RCs, which I don't have the number. They will be enforcing, if this seven-member board says they have a fisherman that they can't control, whatever processor he fishes for, the stiffest penalty is you lose your market for the remainder of June. So we're going to be signing a contract with our processors this year, which gives them, and it's 100% mandatory. If you don't sign the contract, you won't have a processor. So we signed this contract. You're giving up your right to go off and do your own thing, basically. That was part of RC 104. The processors, because of antitrust and things like that, can't sign on to an agreement together. So each individual processor will sign an identical contract with their group of fishermen. But there are very stiff penalties this year, which will end a boat season should they get caught chucking chums or get caught closing when there's not fishing. Because these fishing periods are still open. When we decide it's closed, by regulation, the period will still be open. So you wouldn't technically be breaking a law. But if you violated that, you would lose your market with your processor. So there's quite stiff penalties. That was part of what encouraged the Board of Fish to kind of accept, you know, this method.
Follow-up, Senator?
Yeah, follow-up. Just thank you. You said that that there was 100% participation in 2022, and now it'll be in course of law. Is that right?
Was that?
And now it'll be part of the new reg.
It's not a regulation. It's a commitment that the Area M Seniors Association and Concerned Area M Fishermen, which is the drift gillnet fleet, they don't catch nearly as many chums as the same fleet, but they have signed on to participate as well. And it's an agreement between us and our processors with oversight from the department. If the department sees that we're not playing by the rules, they'll close the fishery. That's what we've been told.
And follow up, will the processors not take fish, not accept fish from folks who decide not to participate or aren't participating or are fishing outside of those windows then? I guess it's a processor question, not a question to you.
Right. I mean, but what I've been told by the processors is that they will not take fish. If you do not sign the agreement to participate in the voluntary plan, you won't have a market in Area M. And I mean, Area M's a relatively small fishery, so it's not too many markets to look for.
just really quick, you refer to it as a voluntary plan. It's not voluntary.
Well, no, I guess it's not.
Okay. You're correct. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It was, but I'm talking about 2022. Now it's mandatory.
Thank you.
Yes. I'm sorry.
Senator Kaufman, question?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Through the chair, to Ms. Thompson, you mentioned that you have an app for this tracking in your presentation. What I'm wondering is, how's the coverage area in where you'll be fishing? Is it is it good enough, or are there other means of uplink, downlink for it?
In 2022, before the introduction of Starlink, we used the radios, the processors. Every boat has the ability to talk to their processor at any time, no matter where they are already. Now with Starlink, everybody has Starlink, and we can use our phones. That's why we developed this app, so that we could access the e-landing system. Part of the contract we'll sign will waive our confidentiality with the e-landing system, so that all the boat's data can be aggregated by the app to tell us how many chums are harvested, how many were harvested the previous day, where they were harvested. We're just taking advantage of we're remote Alaska and the technology we're finally getting a hand.
Follow-up, Senator Kaufman.
I just want to say thank you. I appreciate that. It helps understand how all this will work. Thank you.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what you said there was really interesting to me, that folks will know where the chums are being caught. And I was a deckhand, like everybody in Cordova, for a couple of years. Fishermen are usually pretty secretive about where they're fishing. So is it just sort of a different, not completely secretive, but they don't really want other people to know which bay they're going to in Prince William Sound? Will people know then where everyone is at all times, or is that just the nature of Area M, where people already sort of know where everybody's at?
Yeah. Area M is almost 200 miles. The south, all these questions happen on the South Peninsula. The North Peninsula is a completely different fishery. It harvests no chum. That's why we were concerned that it was included in the bill. But there's 5 or 6 spots in that 200 miles where the entire fleet will operate. So it's not a big secret, and that's part of this whole thing is getting, that was our big kind of hurdle last year, was getting people to, last year we didn't have an agreement. We just did it, on our own. And we had 100%, they didn't have to waive a confidentiality. They didn't have to sign anything, but they did it anyway.
Interesting. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Klayman.
Just going back a little bit in time, you talked about creating this voluntary commissioner board or whatever that would come up with the recommendations, and it sounded like the people on that were all largely commercial fishing interests. And one of the criticisms that I heard from one of the earlier speakers was you're not engaging some of that folks basically from the Yukon and the Tanana Chiefs area. And Mike, query is, when you're creating a board like that, why don't you add at least one, if not two, folks from the subsistence side of the equation, so when you're making decisions, you're getting some of their input? And it seems like, if you create a board and you open yourself up immediately to the criticism that you're not getting the voices that these folks feel like should be getting heard in making the decisions.
I understand the criticism, but I'm a Area M Saner, and I've been for 30 years, and that board is all active fishermen. Every member of that board is fishing, and we make sure to select them so they're fishing over that 200 miles. And having somebody that's not, whether it's a subsistence user or the department or whoever, that's not on the grounds and can't see when the chum are passing, it's not. We don't feel like that is important to this program. This program is designed to have as much information as we can to allow pulses of chums to pass through Area M. And to do that, the people making the decisions need to be on the water in Area M, I guess.
Follow up? Thank you. Senator Bishop, co-chair.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. Welcome. Sorry I was late. The chair told you guys that. But to further go a little deeper on Senator Klayman's question, I'm going to ask it a little bit different way. I'm going to ask it in the fact that would there be some consideration from somebody from the Yukon that's represented and somebody from the Kuskokwim that's represented as an ex officio member of this cooperative management team just to build a good faith effort, because I've got some emails to that effect from some of my constituents, and I'm sure you're not immune to the hardships that's what's been going on in the Yukon.
No, absolutely.
This is what I said to a group of fishermen last year that were and processors. I said, don't think for a minute that this can't happen to you in the future. And that's the severity of what we're looking at, you know, and I just, we're all trying to get to a place where hopefully our salmon runs does not go extinct. It's that critical, and you know that. Mm-hmm. So I just throw that out there at this cooperative management that I would appreciate if that would be taken under consideration going forward. Second question, if I might. Well, so tell me, Ms. Leach, we were going to talk today, and today was a crazy day, and it got off the rails with the schedules. But tell me about the EZ Zone share and the C-Share program, et cetera. Is that applicable or not applicable to REM?
Senator Bishop, through the chair, that is actually not something that I can answer. I don't have anything to do with that. So I think that's a fish and game question. Or, Kylie, do you want to take a stab at it?
Can you define your question?
Well,
just
my
a little
question
bit?
Is
I think it's
for
along the,
the
commissioner's testimony.
It's something
the other
I think we should take a look at. So why would anybody want to chuck a chum to start with, right? I'm not saying anybody does it today, but why did they do it? Why did somebody theoretically do it in the past?
Because it was managed with caps, and caps do create bad decisions, okay. And that's the better part of the what the board did. It's triggers, which encourage us to stay below those so we get more time, not, you know, fish up to a cap. We're not fishing up to – caps can kind of force you to fish up to them and then right at the end make really bad decisions. So
what do you do with your – what's the difference of price between your chums and your reds? You're catching them both at the same time?
Yes. So chums aren't bycatch in the area M salmon fishery. That's a state salmon fishery. We're allowed to harvest chums. What's been going on for, I think, it's before me, but almost 40 years – is we have chum pools in Area M. So each processor combines its fleet, and Area M always has the lowest chum price in the state compared to anybody. Usually, I think last year it was 25 cents. But we have to pool with every boat in that processor's fleet. Some guys fish harder than others. The guys who fish harder are obviously going to catch more chums. It discourages people from harvesting chums. So we don't want to throw them over. We don't make a lot of money on them, but they do pay for $5.50 a gallon fuel. So there is some financial benefit to catching them. So,
and the red price is how much?
I think last year we started around $125, $130. There must be a Bristol Bay fisherman here.
Thank you.
And yes, Senator Kawasaki.
After him, I've got to follow up.
Oh, you've got to follow up.
Just real briefly, thank you, Madam Chair. How much science was – I'm going to Francis. I think your presentation. How much science did you determine that made this comment, 2016, 2019, heat wave decimated Yukon chum? Is that from the department or NOAA, or who was that from?
Senator Bishop, through the chair. So the report that that was received during the Area M meeting was from a department staff, Dr. Katie Howard. That was her whole presentation, was about the warming waters near the Yukon. But she is not the only one that has done a lot of research on the warming waters in the Yukon. In 2019, there was a lot of devastation with chums dead and washed up on shore. It actually was national and international news. There were a lot of scientists who went and studied that on the river at that time. So,
thank you.
Thank you. Senator Kawasaki.
Yep, thank you. During the 22 voluntary reduction time, about how many chum were caught during that time?
544,000.
And then, do you know how much were the prior year?
1.16 million.
Okay. And then how many red were caught in those also 2 years?
21, I want to say 3 million, 3.5, and I think we caught 5.5 to 6 million chum or sockeye in 2022. We were actually more successful at catching sockeye by catching less chums, if that makes any sense.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, the big Bristol Bay run, too. We have to give that some credit.
Yeah, the last 2 years, it looks like. Yeah. Okay. All right, thank you. Thanks.
Further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Leach and Mr. Thompson, that was great. Thank you. All right, our next presenter is Kurt Chamberlain. He's the Assistant Attorney General with Calista. Mr. Chamberlain?
Yeah.
Welcome. If you would identify
yourself. Hi there, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. If you would identify yourself
for
the record and proceed to give us your testimony.
Okay, good afternoon. My name is Kurt Chamberlain, and I'm speaking on behalf of Calista Corporation. I'm a Calista shareholder and a member of the Aniak Tribe. I grew up living off the land and commercial fishing in the Middle Kuskokwim River until the industry collapsed in the mid-1990s. I wanted to start by addressing some of the criticisms that came to Proposition 140, and more specifically to SB 128. The largest complaint was the impact of closing the fishery on the Aleutian Peninsula. They worried of schools closing, out migrations, and the boroughs and communities losing much needed tax revenue. We at Celeste aren't deaf to those concerns. In fact, we've been living that nightmare for the last three decades. The economy in the Celeste region crashed along with the salmon population. Our region has the highest unemployment and poverty levels in the state and nation. Our communities have dwindled. Out migration is rampant, particularly among the young. Our communities are suffering. In my region, the Middle Kuskokwim, the native population declined by one-third over the last 10 years. Crooked Creek is an example. They have a population that's declined by half over the last 20 years, and its school is now in danger of closing. Georgetown is now populated by one family, and the tribe's looking for a way to motivate people to move back into the community. Many students in our region are now attending boarding schools away from their family because their schools are shut down. With the loss of the youth and our population comes with the loss of language, our culture, and our attachment to the land. This has severe consequences to our tribes and to our native way of life. The Aleutian Peninsula, however, need not worry. With nearly $2.8 billion in economic output resulting from commercial fishing, the Aleutian Peninsula dwarfs all other regions in Alaska. It controls two of the largest four fishing ports in the world, including the largest Dutch harbor, which has held that honor for the last 24 years. The Aleutian Peninsula has other fisheries, including herring, groundfish, cod, crabs, to name a few. It's the only fishing region in Alaska where salmon's not the primary fishing export. And even without salmon, the Aleutian Peninsula would still be the top volume fishery in Alaska. The Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers, by comparison, have only one fishery, salmon. And for the last 2 years, those two regions were the only ones in the state completely closed to commercial fishing. The Aleutian Peninsula is far better suited to endure this storm than the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers were. This last week, I was asked if it was appropriate for the legislature to go to the legislature if you're unsatisfied with the Board of Fish's decision. Naturally, the answer would be no. However, when special interests run the board and the board ignores its constitutional, statutory, and regulatory mandates, it becomes appropriate for the legislature to implement statutory guardrails to ensure its intent is adhered to. The underlying problem with fisheries in Alaska is structural. Despite a clear and ambiguous statutory subsistence priority, which has been upheld by the courts, this priority is illusory. While our commercial fishing harvest statewide is at near historic high levels, our in-river salmon run statewide are suffering due to overfishing and competition from hatchery salmon. The nearly 120,000 residents of the Yukon-Kuskokwim watershed are without a subsistence option. There are subsistence restrictions impacting nearly every Alaskan statewide. The Board of Fish customarily has 3 commercial fishing seats, 3 sports fishing seats, and only 1 subsistence seat, despite the statutory priority. And despite this, even some governors have ignored that custom in favor of special interests in the past. Chief Ridley already went into great detail on the failures of the Board of Fish, and I need not repeat that. However, the current state management fisheries are pro-commercial fish and pro-hatchery, which has had catastrophic consequences in River Samson. The Department of Law has openly advocated to the Board of Fish that it had no duty to limit harvest in area M to protect the runs in terminal fisheries, despite the fact that in 2021, Area M harvested over 1 million chum, and despite the fact that the board had a regulation prescribing intercept fishery harvest of depleted salmon runs. The court then failed to enforce the legislature's mandates in the Native Village of Elam decision, only arguing that the board had a duty to take a hard look at the facts before making a decision. What we're left with is a subsistence priority that is nothing more than window dressing. The coastal fishing industry essentially runs the state fisheries, leaving subsistence and sport fishing to fight over what's left, if anything. The last article I've attached to the record outlines the distrust between subsistence users in the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers in the mid-1990s. It paints a very clear picture. However, since that time, salmon stocks in the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers have declined an additional 90%. There can be no argument that this fishery is being managed properly or that the subsistence users are being adequately represented at a state level. If we're to fix the problems with what's wrong with the fishery statewide, we must implement adequate guardrails to ensure subsistence is protected. Finally, with respect to the importance of the salmon of our region and the effect it's had on the collapse, like Chief Ridley, I'm at a loss of words of how to describe it. It hits at every level. So on Chalice's behalf, I would like to invite the board members and the members of the subcommittee to come and visit our region to see its effects. These effects are nearly impossible to put into words, and there's nowhere near enough time to address that. And thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chamberlain. Committee members, any questions for Mr. Chamberlain? Yes.
Yep.
Co-Chair Bishop.
Thank you. Mr. Chamberlain, thank you for calling in today, and thank you for your testimony. And lastly, on your last comments, I asked board of some of the board members on that were coming through for confirmation hearings a week ago to invite the entire Board of Fish to come up and down, come down the Yukon and the Kuskokwim rivers to get that firsthand look. And also, I think last week I asked the board members that we would like to come out to Area M and see for ourselves firsthand, because we're not going to solve this in isolation. It's not going to happen.
I agree. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So thank you for your comments.
Yes, and thank you. And we would greatly appreciate someone coming out to look at it. Like my wife was very surprised when she first visited our region 20 years ago, and she had no idea. She thought she knew what rural Alaska was like until she visited. And so I think for that perspective, in-person visits, I think, would be greatly appreciated among everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chamberlain. Other members, questions? All right, not seeing any. Mr. Chamberlain, thank you very much for calling in. I appreciate your testimony. Last person.
Thank you.
The last person up to speak today is Virgil Umfrenauer. He is on the Fairbanks Fish and Game Advisory Committee. Mr. Umfrenauer, pardon me. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, very clearly. Thanks.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
My name is Virgil Umfrenauer. Can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear us?
I can hear you fine.
Okay, perfect. Welcome. I'll let you go ahead and proceed.
Hey, thank you. My name is Virgil Umfrenauer. I live in North Pole. I own a fish processing plant in Fairbanks, Fish and Meat. I've been processing fish since 1985 on the Yukon River. I've also processed fish out of Norton Sound, some out of Bristol Bay, even Prince William Sound, Copper River region. I served three terms on the Board of Fisheries. I also am a member of the Yukon River panel. I was one of the people that actually negotiated the treaty. I've been a member of the Pacific Salmon Commission since 1988, longer than anyone for either country. And I might, as far as this, what they did in Area M at the last board meeting, is they turned it over to the processors to be basically the managers. I can remember in 1990, right after they had changed the, you know, the 200-mile limit went into effect in 95, they had the joint venture groundfish fisheries when they had the Bank of Norway and Japan interests that owned the vessels, and they had to get Alaska partners. So that was the joint venture fishery. Then they eliminated the joint venture fishery, I believe, in 1989, and Americanized the fleet. But they didn't put observers on immediately. And so we get up, I'm at one of these salmon treaty meetings, and NOAA makes a report. Well, they caught 248 Chinook salmon as bycatch in that fishery from the first part of January until the middle of February. Then a year later, after they get observers on board, they give a report. No, and this time they caught 24,000. So that tells you how much good it does to let the fleet regulate itself. Now, as I said, I'm a fish processor. So I make out fish tickets, and I have to report them to the Board of Game. All those numbers on how many chum salmon are caught and how many sockeye, Chinook, all those numbers are written on there by the processor. The seiners have so many fish that they're not going to count the fish as they deliver them to the tender. The tender is going to suck them off with a big vacuum pump, and they're going to count the fish once they get back to the processor. And they may have all the different fishermen's fish mixed up if they're seiners. I seriously doubt if they're going to keep special regular bags or whatever to keep them separate. But anyway, it's a joke. This is what caused statehood. Now I want to go into what the board actually did wrong. In 1995, when I was on the board, we were deliberating the proposal to cut the chum cap for Area M, and I was testifying. It was in March of 1995. And in March of 1995, I said, we do not have sustained yield. We have not had a subsistence fishery in the northern Norton Sound region for chum salmon for 4 years. And so one of the other board members, and at the time we had a guy from Sandpoint on the board, one of the other board members says, yes, we do have sustained yield. And I said, what do you mean? You can't go catch a fish to eat. And he says, well, there's fish for the birds, the seagulls to eat, and there's fish for the bears to eat. And so I decided I'm going to write a definition of sustained yield because we don't have one in the codified regulations. So I got a buddy of mine, and we wrote, that was an attorney, and we wrote what I thought was a good definition. I sent it to Robin Samuelson in Bristol Bay because I knew him really well, and Robin says it's a damn good idea. So I sent it to Dr. White, who was on the board with me. And Dr. White says, it's a good idea, but we need to do more. We need to make a total sustainable salmon policy. So that's what we started on. It took us 5 years to do it, and we had our own scientists when we did it. Dr. White went to the governor and says, we don't want have politics involved in this. We want to write a real sustainable policy. We want our own scientists. We got our own scientists. So we wrote the sustainable salmon policy. I'm not going to go into that anymore. I just want to go into a statute that the department wrote in 1990 because of this issue. And I'm going to read from it. It's Alaska Statute 16.05.251, Regulations of the Board of Fisheries. And it's Section 17D. The board shall adopt criteria for the allocation of fishery resources and shall use the criteria as appropriate to particular allocation discussions. The criteria may include factors such as the history of each commercial fish, personal use, sport, guided sport, and commercial fishery, the history of the fishery in Area M only started with the codfish fishery in the late 1800s or early 1900s. They didn't really start fishing for salmon until around 1910, somewhere in there. But in the Yukon drainage, it started with the Russians. And in Norton Sound, it started with the Russians. The Russians had a fort at St. Michael. They had a fort at Unalakleet. They had a fort at Nulato. They had to travel by dog team. The commercial fishery started back then. Then we bought Russia, from Russia, Alaska. And the army went to St. Michael. They had a fort there. They had a fort at Tanana. They had a fort at Eagle. How did they get around in the winter? By dog team. So they bought fish that the local people harvested. Criteria number two. The number of residents and non-residents who have participated in each fishery in the past and the number of residents and non-residents who can reasonably be expected to participate in the future. The number of commercial fishing permits in the Yukon River are 165 fish wheel, 722 gillnet fisheries for the lower Yukon, 775 thicknet gillnet permits in the upper Yukon. In Norton Sound, there's 220 commercial fishing permits. In Kotzebue, there's 205 commercial fishing permits. These are all set net. And in the Kuskokwim, 835 for a total of 2,222 fishing permits. There's roughly maybe 300 fishing permits in Area M, and I know only about 70 sailors have been fishing recently. And there's one heck of a bunch more subsistence fishermen, personal use fishermen in the Fairbanks area alone. There's over 100,000. Okay, number three, this is super important. One of the criteria in this statute put down by the legislature that was not considered. The importance of each fishery for providing residents the opportunity to obtain fish for personal and family consumption. We have zero for salmon. We can go try to catch a pike, grayling, in the Fairbanks area, or catch and release. Number four, the availability of alternative fishery resources. We have none. The only one that there, you can maybe count would be Norton Sound. They do have a small king crab fishery. But Area M, they have, in 2021, they had 225 non-salmon fishing permits. That's people with a commercial salmon permit in Area M fished 225 other permits. I was on the board when the groundfish fishery was made. A bunch of them are groundfish fishery permits. And we made that so that it would be state waters groundfish, and the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council was upset for us doing that in state waters, but we did it. And we put a 20-pot limit. So that would keep the big boys from Seattle out. Then in 1998, that was in 97. In 98, I was the chairman that did it for Kodiak and Alaska Peninsula region and Chignik. I wrote the Tanner Crab Management Plan because that fishery had been closed for years and they finally had enough to open it. And so I wrote that plan And what I did in that plan is I wanted to make damn sure that it was a sustainable plan. I made it so they could only fish during daylight hours. A 20-pot limit is all they could have. And that fishery, the Kodiak part of it, is the largest crab fishery in the state right now, period. And they got to harvest 1.7 million crabs this past winter in Area M. And they got paid $3 a pound for them. But they get halibut fisheries, all other kinds of fisheries. So they have all kinds of other fisheries to do that we don't, no one in AYK has, especially the Yukon and Kuskokwim. Okay, number five, importance of each fishery to the economy of the state. Okay, the Area M Saners last year, well, in 2021, the Area M Saners average income for salmon was some $701,000 for maybe 6 weeks fishing. And I wrote Proposal 140. I was the person that chaired the committee that made that proposal in January or February of 2001 when the board had to meet for 26 straight days because the chair of Senate Finance had cut our budget by 35% because he didn't really want sustainable salmon management, and he was punishing the board. So he punished not just the Board of Fish, but the Board of Game and all the ACs by cutting the damn budget by 35% in 1990. So we had to do AYK, Bristol Bay, and Area M board meetings in one meeting, which took 26 days of from never less than 12 hours a day and sometimes 16 hours a day meetings straight through for 26 days. Anyway, and we totally did away with the chum caps because they're a waste of time. Anytime you have a cap, and those big processors from out of state or anyone, if they know their business is getting shut down, they're not going to report those fish. It's just that plain. It's just that simple. So chum caps are ridiculous to have. Okay, let me get to the next one. I'm getting to the end of the allocation criteria.
Mr. Umphener.
Importance. That's on the importance in the economy.
Mr. Umphener.
Something that Chief Ridley spoke a little bit about, but I'm also a honey guy.
Mr. Umphener.
I'm also an infantry officer. I served in Vietnam.
Yes.
I served in Nome. I commanded the Fairbanks National Guard from 71 to 74.
Mr.
And then
Umphener.
I was in Nome, and I ended up being the executive officer up there for Nome when we had all villages north of Yukon River were National Guard.
Mr. Umphener.
Like on St. Lawrence Island. We had 85 people in the National Guard there.
Mr. Umphener.
Good rifle shooters. I was a competitive rifle shooter. I commanded a sniper unit in Vietnam.
Mr. Umphener.
My rifle team from the 1st Scout
would
Battalion,
wrap up, please.
We play 6th in the nation. I'm almost done, Madam Chair. Very last thing is the importance of each fishery in providing recreational opportunities. Area M does have one big thing going for them on that. The world record halibut was caught there by a Vietnam veteran from Fairbanks at Dutch Harbor. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Umphener. Are there questions?
I have one.
Vice Chair Bishop, Co-Chair Bishop.
Mr. Umphener, can you tell me what's the opinion of the Yukon River fishermen on some in-river incubation hatcheries? Is that still a no, or people warming up to the idea, or is that still a hard no?
No, it's more or less a no, and this isn't. I hate because I could speak forever on how bad hatcheries are and what our real issue is. Our real issue in this state is hatcheries, but no, I don't think they've warmed up much to that. I know some of the Canadians have, though, and, you know, I've met with the Canadians, let's see, two times in the last 4 months, and each time is at least a week long. Some of them, they're so depressed over there, it's unreal.
Thank you.
We only put across the border 12,000 Chinook salmon. The very minimum escapement for the Canadian portion of the Yukon is supposed to be 42,500. And on the fishing branch of the Porcupine River, our minimum escapement goal is 22,000. We put 2,000, 10%. they're super depressed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Umphenor. No other questions, so thank you very much for your testimony. That concludes our meeting for today. The next meeting will be Wednesday, May 3rd at 3:30 p.m., and on the agenda that day will be Senate Bill 48. So Senate Bill 48 is the carbon offset program on state lands offered by the governor. So this is the trees bill. So that will be the topic. We do have some additional amendments that will be heard that day. So at this time, the meeting is adjourned. Let the record reflect it is 4:41 p.m.